Lisa explains to Bart that her father would never leave her mother crying at the altar. For love, you ask? It's the perfect setup for the cultural myth, but instead, she says,
Dad would never miss an open bar with chicken wings.
But then to pay homage to the myth, she then half-heartedly adds,
Plus, he loves Mom and us, yada, yada, yada.
Although the writers mildly criticize the myth here, we do find the myth to be so powerful that they use it to conclude the episode, but it still creates a giant illogical conclusion. Marge's sisters kidnap Homer and lock him up in a torture chamber. But anyway, the sisters go to great lengths. They purchase a webcam so they can watch Homer while they're at work. They pick up a voice modulator so they can talk to him. They even rent a torture chamber for an entire year.
I'm chained up like a common bicycle.
Now, in their modulated, evil-sounding voice, they inform him,
To remove that chain, you need the key to the lock.
A lollipop then slides into the room with an embedded key.
Is this a key I have to lick through a lollipop? Oh, how awful.
He discovers
the lollipop is made of hot sauce.
He's resigned to his captivity, so he begins reading this love note he wrote for Marge.
Marge, I hope this day is as perfect for you as the day we met was for me. You always find the one grain of sugar in the salt shaker that is I. With each marriage, I get a little better.
Poor guy. He loves her so much.
The myth has won. Love conquers all. They release him. The writers use several different things, among them stereotyping, which is oversimplifying a group of people, and they pepper that throughout the show, although they tend to use it for comedic value.
Mother Teresa stopped here to gas up her Vespa.
It often appears out of laziness or habit. While all of Springfield's excited for the Parsons' visit, he appears to be a likable person, but they depict him as being a bit mindless.
I love to go to church. It's where I like to be. I get a day in of praying and still tee off by three.
Of course, his golf clubs are sitting in the car, and he's driving a white convertible, which appears to imply his mind may be somewhere else, not really on church governance.
A little wafer.
I'll take two, if you don't mind.
Now, on a snack rating website, one user describes those wafers as fake vanilla and more sugary taste. Now, this is a little bit subtle, but the cookie's notable ingredient, vanilla, appears to be a jab at clergy, or those living the vanilla life. If you stop and brainstorm for a moment, it's difficult to imagine the writers coming up with a snack that's even more bland, which reinforces what some Americans may already believe. After all, we are what we eat, right? Now, the parson grows nuttier as we get into the final scene. When the reverend discovers he has a lack of credentials, that meant all the graces he's said at the dinner table are now void.
That food might as well have been regurgitated by Satan himself.
And he begins to sing again.
Regurgitated by Satan, he couldn't keep it down. Oh, 666, he got 666, and that's how volcanoes were born.
At this point, even the reverend and his wife kind of lock eyes, implying to the parsons. Another stereotype. I left it on the bus. Reverend Lovejoy travels across town to inform the people he served that the blessings he gave them are now void because he lacked the credentials at the time. And he runs over to Jasper. Now, he's one of three minor characters the writers used to depict aging America.
A bureaucratic snafu. I wasn't an official minister when we laid your dear Estelle to rest.
So, she's still alive?
I'm afraid not.
Good. Because I left her ashes on the bus.
Now, this stereotypes old people in two ways. First, it implies that old people have all lost their mind. There's no logic to Jasper's dialogue. How could his wife be mad at him for leaving her ashes on the bus if she's still alive? It shows he's also now very absent-minded and prone to forgetting major things like, I had to grab that urn off the bus seat when I get off. It also suggests he's incapable of tracking down the ashes through the transit authority's lost and found system. But the writers go beyond normal signs of aging. They are trying to say old people are stupid. See, Jasper could be showing signs of senile dementia, but the signs aren't entirely accurate. Well, one could argue leaving the urn on the bus is kind of problematic, that he's getting a bit confused, but I don't think Jasper got mixed up getting off the bus. He was just too stupid to remember to pick up the ashes when he left. Now, secondly, they connect Jasper's impaired mental state to the bus ridership in general. They could have lost the ashes anyplace. I mean, Jasper could have dropped them down the storm drain, or he could have left them on the roof of his SUV, and his dear Estelle could have slid off while he was driving. But for some reason, the joke becomes so much funnier when they mention the word bus.
They left their ashes on the bus.
It's probably because we've all ridden on the bus in the United States at some point in our life, and we've seen scary people on it. Bus riders tend to be kind of impaired, or they're too poor. Anyway, they can't drive, and so that category seems pretty scary to us, the average American. It's a group that the writers exploit. One, they put Jasper and, by connection, all old people in. The writers of the show conveyed their values through either positive or derogatory messages. An explicit one is one that's obvious. An implicit message is one that tends to be a bit subconscious or may require a bit of background research to detect. Pop culture, the show is full of it, and often the best jokes reference common references we share as Americans. It doesn't matter if these are perceived experiences or whether they're accurate or even true. If we believe they exist, they exist. And so the show's writers can evoke our emotion by calling these experiences up. One of them, the Reverend goes to the Simpsons' house to deliver bad news. He officiated over their marriage, and it was never official.
Reverend Lovejoy, you deliver pizza now? We didn't order a pizza. But you forgot the pizza anyway. Marge, the pizza place screwed up again!
Although his string of comments are really abnormal, Homer is vocalizing a logical pattern that a typical American mind can relate with. To drive the point home, the writers call up our emotional pain. We've all felt that mixture of hunger and disappointment as we've learned the food we were planning to eat is now delayed.
Marge, the pizza place screwed up again!
They reflect this emotion and it gives us a good laugh. Another one. Marge is later planning her perfect wedding.
Marge,
and we begin to see her micromanaging details to the point where Homer finally calls her
Bridezilla.
Bridezilla?
And she gets angry and shoots back and calls him
King Wrong.
Well, it doesn't surprise us as viewers when we start to see a warlike scene between Godzilla and King Kong such form. Even their mannerisms reference the Japanese movie Godzilla vs. King Kong. We associate the scene with the cheesy movies, and it gives us a good laugh. But what makes the scene even more comical is its non-sequitur finish. Convention would lead us to believe the fight scene between two characters would be like what we saw in the movies, but instead, Marge just walks out of the room as the Godzilla character, and the dismissing Homer walks over to the fridge, cracks open a beer, and sits down with a magazine. Now, what makes this scene unique is how they're both simultaneously logical and illogical. For example, Reverend Lovejoy paces nervously outside the First Church of Springfield waiting for the parson to arrive.
Oh, calm down, Tim. He's just your old roommate from Texas Christian.
He's like the Pope of this thing. This would be like Mary Kay visiting you when you were selling her cosmetics. That is, if you had stuck with it.
Now, that's a statement that makes us wonder if the Reverend considers women to be quitters. Either way, she's not standing for it.
You asked me to quit because I was making more than you.
We'll never know how Tim Lovejoy would have responded because the parson's car pulls up. The writers then appear to be opening a cultural myth that a man must always be the breadwinner. And of course, we know that's not always the case. Women sometimes are. It's not the role, but it's a large exception. The Orlando Sentinel posted an article saying that about a quarter of women in two-income households tend to be the one bringing home the larger paycheck. And this seems to be the case that the Reverend and the Reverend seems a bit insecure about it. A huge myth here. In the end, love conquers all. This is America's largest myth. And it's one that's completely understandable to pop up during an episode about a wedding. Now, we see this myth in every American medium, from Percy Sledge's song websites describing romance. One of them's really sappy. It says, "Try to stand in the path of a man who truly loves a woman. Try to separate him from her, and he will move a city to get to her." I don't know about moving a city. But anyway, the writers do poke fun at it a bit.